All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, October 20th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to be taking a look today at a game-by-game breakdown of every game in the NFL for Week 7, typically something we do Friday. We're a day early this week because of some travel plans, but we will be, instead of going through it, we'll just kind of wrap our cash game plays into the game-by-game breakdown, and we'll be all set for Week 7. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com. You can head over to the site and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, powered by Lineup Lab, which will help you calculate optimal lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL right now, also NBA coming within, you know, a little less than a week for the first night tip-off for NBA. That's all wrapped into the same membership platform. So you go over there, you grab free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and you're all set for all the sports that we cover on a nightly or weekly basis for DFS. All right, buddy, we are going to talk about every game on the slate and the DFS implications that come along with, you know, just every single game. We typically don't worry too much about Thursday night games, mostly because we're usually doing our value plays podcast on Thursday, and then we kind of skip over it. Though there is some interesting stuff for this Bears-Green Bay game, which we can, I think, touch on very quickly if you just happen to listen to it tonight. Eddie Lacy is not going to play. How do you see this Green Bay running back situation sort of working out if you were to, if you wanted to get some value in on the slate?
Well, I think in terms of who's actually going to get the carries, saying it's anybody's guess is kind of a cop-out, but
right,
it's sort of anybody's guess. I mean, the nice thing that we have in our favor here is that while it's anybody's guess, the guys that you're picking between are all, you know, all represent quite a tremendous value. So you take a guy like Ty Montgomery, who's the bare minimum price on DraftKings, just 5,600 on FanDuel. He actually led the team in targets last week with an incredible 34% target share on the 35 snaps where he was on the field. So given that he, you know, played about half the team's snaps and still generated such a high target share, shows that the Packers think pretty highly of him. Now, while I think they'd prefer to spread him out as a wide receiver, there has been buzz about him getting carries as well. So, you know, say he gets just 7 targets but carries the ball 6 or 7 times, you're looking at a guy who will probably pretty easily return that kind of value. And I suspect he'll be a heavy chalk play on the Thursday slate on DraftKings. And I think he represents a value on FanDuel as well. The higher volatility guy is going to be Niall Davis. The Packers did trade for him. And, you know, he is not a guy that I'm super high on in the long term, but on a one-off, just a guy who's used to playing running back is really what the Packers need. So wouldn't surprise me if he has a big game. I suspect a lot of people will throw his name into the ring. You could frankly kind of play both almost on FanDuel if you think Davis is going to get something like 14 to 15 carries, but I don't think that's a sure thing. So I think you need to acknowledge that you're welcoming some risk in your life if you decide to play him.
Yeah, I need to look that up. I think there's a chance that he is not eligible on DraftKings, and I'm going to look this up real quick. I think I would just, and I'm not going to do it on the podcast, where I'll double check it in a second and then come back to it. But there might be an eligibility issue with Davis. It's really funny to be thinking about starting a wide receiver. This is going back to Montgomery. Starting a wide receiver at running back is just such a weird thing, but it's really more of a how decimated the Packers are in the run game more than it's like, more than it's him being like any kind of like great player or anything.
Well, and they're also considering Randall Cobb as well. And I think Cobb, frankly, also represents a value. Again, it's always weird on these Thursday slates to, you know, run a stack because everyone is going to kind of stack this game with the same idea that you have. So you're not really crushing it or anything like that. But yeah, I think those are all reasonable plays. It's also worth mentioning on the Bears side of the ball, Cameron Meredith continues to represent a value, probably the best value wide receiver of the week. He's now out targeting Alshon Jeffrey, had an absurd amount of targets last week, and just a guy you probably want to play in every format if you're going to play the Thursday slate.
Yeah, usually we don't typically spend too much time on Thursdays, and a lot of times there just isn't a ton of value wrapped up in Thursday. Tonight there is. It is worth it, I think, to play some lineups there because of some of these guys that you can grab hold of. Like you said, Meredith, Montgomery. There just are some pieces that we can get in there cheap, especially for the full week slate. So this is a Thursday slate that I'll definitely tune into. The other kind of wonkiness piece going into this week is we have another London game with the Giants and the Rams starting at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. These games are such a mess, I think. I just don't understand why the NFL does them necessarily.
Well, you know, the British are known for their love of NFL football, though.
Well, I read an interesting article that was about, you know, the general idea, this is not new news, is that the NFL ratings are way down. And some people speculate, well, a couple reasons. One, there's just simply too many games on, and so people just get are just getting sort of just tired of it mostly. And it's just like, well, you got a game Thursday. Now you got a game Sunday morning. You got a game Sunday morning and you got your Monday game. And it's just kind of at some point people, and some of these games are just bad, like the Giants and Rams. It's just not, it's not appointment television. And so the NFL seems to be, they just sort of have, are starting to overstay their welcome maybe with some of this stuff. And the other piece that I read was interesting was, and this is not DFS related, I just thought it was funny, is it shows you're totally clueless because they fly the Rams out to London, even though that game is going to start at like 5:30 in the morning Pacific time, where their actual fans watch the games. And so how can you even, and this is a new fan base too, so it's like, oh, I know how to get our new fan base excited. Make them get up at 5:30 in the morning on a Sunday and just kind of grind out some football. It just seems like some general cluelessness. That aside, is there anything worth getting up early on Sunday morning and putting in an early Sunday AM lineup with this game?
Really, the only two names I'm looking at for this game, I think, are going to be Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. Beckham still represents a little bit of a savings over some of the other elite wide receivers, and we've seen that, you know, he still has it in him to put up an absolutely monster week, going off last week for 8 receptions and 222 yards and 2 touchdowns. I also appreciate the symmetry of that line, so, you know, I'm into symmetry as a general rule, and particularly when it comes to huge NFL games. Eli also quite cheap. I mean, 7,700. While he's pretty inconsistent, and that's why he's not priced among the top guys, he's shown that he has top quarterback upside. So, you know, particularly on that Thursday through Sunday slate, he represents a good option if you don't want to roll the dice on, you know, Brian Hoyer maintaining his production or, you know, going down the Aaron Rodgers route again. But yeah, both of those two guys are the ones that jumped to mind for me.
Yeah, in my previous life, I was more of a Giants fan. This is not a game. I mean, I'll get up just because we're working during that time anyway. But in general, this game just doesn't really do anything for me. And I suspect it won't do anything much for the casual fan either, as both these teams pretty much stink.
How about that Kenny Britt coming off a huge week? You know, a lot of people were kind of on Tavon Austin, including us as a kind of a fringe value guy on a really cheap salary. And then Britt went out there and had 136 yards and 2 touchdowns. Anything you like about him?
I mean, he's been fairly at least consistent with receptions. Like, they will throw to him every game, so that alone is probably worth something. Keenan was pretty accurate last game. I think at some point he completed like 20 straight passes or something. He had a really, really nice game. I don't know if that's him coming to his own, if it was just Detroit bad or whatever it is, but yeah, I mean, he's interesting, I guess. It's hard to trust the Rams passing game, but
it's hard to trust any part of their game, frankly,
right? Exactly. They're just not good enough on offense, where all things being equal, I mean, on a short slate, sure, you need to jam some of these guys in just to round out your lineup, but
on 6,200 on FanDuel, you're not killing yourself, you know, if you get kind of his average performance this year, which is around 10 fantasy points. But you know, he did, I think, run hot in terms of converting targets to receptions and, yeah.
And touchdowns,
too. Not an exciting
too.
Guy for me, generally speaking.
No. Okay, let's get into the Sunday main slate. The first game we have is Buffalo and Miami. There's some question about Shady McCoy. He has a hamstring issue. I think it was something that happened last game, but he played through it. But now there's some speculation that he might not play this week. He would be replaced by Mike Gillisley if he weren't able to go. Gillisley's coming very cheap if he was just going to be every down back. What do you see, if you were to guess about like sort of this Buffalo Bills situation now, how do you see it playing out? And on the other side of the ball, we have Miami coming off just, I would consider it to be a surprise / huge win over the Steelers last week. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, Gillisley's really cheap. Buffalo has shown that their offensive line can support a quite a strong running game this season. And Miami stinks, right? I mean, they beat Pittsburgh last week on a hurt Ben Roethlisberger, but I don't see them repeating that same performance very frequently going forward, especially given sort of their anemic offense. So I think the Bills will run the ball in the high teens. I think Gillisley probably will be the guy, and I think he does represent quite a good value. There's a little bit more uncertainty there than maybe you would like, just because like a lot of times the number one guy will go down and there's a really clear guy ready to fill his shoes. The Bills, of course, will be deciding probably between Gillisley and Jonathan Williams. But I think, you know, Gillis Lee's success, at least on a yards per carry basis, will give him the first run. And he's just so cheap and so likely to be the goal line back from my perspective that I think that he will probably wind up being a pretty safe cash game play.
Yeah, I think so too. What about Jay Ajayi? He kind of just ripped off one of the week, the game of the week last week against the Steelers. They've been a running back committee up until this point. Do you think that that game for him solidifies him? I know Arian Foster is still, not sure if he's even been cleared to play.
No, he's not 100%. Either.
Right.
I mean, Ajayi is a funny guy because he, like, not funny, I don't know him personally. He's not like a stand-up comedian or anything, but he's an interesting test case for fantasy because, you know, first of all, his snaps have been all over the place. I mean, like his snaps for the season, 37, 18, 14, 30, and then 48 against Pittsburgh. Like, that's pretty troubling. I mean, it just pretty much means that until last week, the Dolphins weren't using him in all their different packages. I suspect because they are concerned about him as a pass blocker as well. But yeah, I mean, if he's going to really be the guy, if he's going to go in there and get 48 snaps and 20 plus carries, he's worth a consideration. I do think though that he's entered, you know, we talked about this price range in the past, it's kind of that no man's land on FanDuel where if he's going to be 6,400, you're basically, you know, in this weird spot where you're going to either decide, is he going to be really worth 1,100 more than a guy like Mike Gillisley? And simultaneously, if you do think so, shouldn't you just pay up and just get one of the safer running backs right on the higher tier? Like, if you're already thinking about going expensive for the sake of safety, you know, maybe you just pay an extra 1,000 and play Christian Michael, right? So I don't know that he'll wind up being a play for us. I think he's a guy a lot of people will take a stab on in big tournaments, though.
He's a little more interesting at 4,500 on DraftKings, where that price tier just doesn't totally crush you, and their pricing is spread out so much that, you know, 4,500 for him is a little easier to, I don't know, to just to sink your teeth into, I think. But I just don't just trust it. It just seems like they still are kind of hot-handish team. It doesn't seem like they have much of a clue as what they want to do on offense in general, although, you know, they wanted to run the ball in the past. Maybe they see him as the guy. I'd probably need another week before I'm able to go all in on that. And then, honestly, after another week, the price will probably climb and we'll probably still be stuck on him. So,
yeah, and there's a lot. I mean, we'll get to these as we go, but yeah, there are a lot of pretty cheap options in a very similar situations for this week, right? Like, you know, Jacquizz Rodgers, you know, whoever emerges out of San Francisco. Like, I just don't know that if you're going to be going cheap, that's the direction you want to go.
The Miami pass defense has not been very good this year. Tyrod Taylor is a guy that our system typically likes simply because he has the ability to throw. I mean, he's not a great thrower, obviously, but he also just runs a lot. He ran a decent amount last week, which it was nice to see against San Francisco, 8 for 68. He gets out into the run game about 6 to 7 times a game. Is he a guy that you, for $5,500 on DraftKings, that's still very, very cheap for a starting quarterback? Is the floor high enough considering how much he runs?
I believe it is. You're never going to feel great about it. But I think that LeSean McCoy being out actually boosts Tyrod Taylor's stock a little bit. I do believe that the Dolphins will be able to, you know, do a better job against the run overall and will give the Bills more opportunity to pass. But I think Taylor specifically will get a lot. Like, we saw McCoy being used in those direct snap situations last weekend. And I think Taylor, it's so weird that they would do that because Taylor is like the exact quarterback you want for plays like that. So if he gets those plays, then I think that his stock will go up even further. And I think we could see him, you know, even crest up into maybe the low double digits running attempts. So yes, I do think he's playable, with the caveat that it's never going to feel great watching him out there if you have him on your team.
The next game on the slate is the Vikings and the Eagles. And this game kind of threw me for a loop because I was like, didn't the Vikings and Eagles already play? But maybe it's just because we've talked about them. It's sort of like in the same surprise team genre that I just have just...
Yeah, surprise team battle.
I've just transposed them, that as being them. They've already matched up. But they play in what's considered to be one of the lowest overall total implied totals of the week at only 40, which makes sense. Both these defenses have been very, very good this year. Is there, because of the defensive matchup, I think in terms of DVOA, I'm pretty sure these teams are both in the top 10. Is this kind of a stay away from DFS fantasy purposes simply because the defenses are too good?
It sure looks like it. I mean, you know, and it's not to say, like, there really haven't been a lot of skill guides we've considered from either of these teams all season long. So, you know, I don't think you're going to want to pay 7,000 for Stephon Diggs in this game, right? Like, no real running back has emerged for Minnesota given Peterson's absence. Philly really hasn't been able to support any guys on the prices that they're sitting at. Kyle Rudolph has been a big disappointment. So, no, I don't think really you're going to consider anyone except the defenses in this game.
Yeah, and I think you can consider the defenses. They're both pretty good. Neither of these offenses light the world on fire. The game should be played pretty at a pretty slow pace, which should keep the scoring down altogether, which is what you're looking for in defense. So I don't mind going either of those directions, but I think for the most part, this is mostly a stay away. The next game is the Saints and the Chiefs. The Chiefs are huge favorites here, -6.5 at home against the Saints. The Saints have probably what will end up being, I would suspect, their lowest implied total of the season, though I haven't looked forward projected out their schedule yet. But they're less than 22 points, typically in that 25 to 26 point area. You know, Breeze is a guy that we've looked at in terms of just being a safe quarterback this year. Does the implied total, just the fact that KC is a pretty good defense, the way this game script might play out, does Breeze end up being off the table for you? And then kind of what do you do with the Chiefs side of the ball, who they're expected to put up a ton of points, over 28 points? So I asked you a ton of questions there. Let's start with Breeze. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, Breeze, when it comes to projecting him from week to week, it's very odd because, you know, he's been now so consistent for two straight years, and yet he often winds up like right outside of the cash game consideration for a lot of people. But, you know, on a week-to-week basis, like, we've seen what he's pretty much capable of. That said, you know, consistent guys, we've talked about this across all sports, but consistent guys suffer a slight penalty because, and I should say, they suffer a penalty because it's hard to get value on them.
Well, right, because of his price.
They wind up being priced appropriately for basically what they can do. And so when they get down, especially in slower matchups, be it like football or basketball, then they become less of a value. And so, you know, Breeze, our system sees him sort of as like a league average value this week. And maybe the individual might value him more highly because of the, you know, implied safety of playing him. But, you know, Breeze has been worse on the road this season. This game is in Arrowhead, which is not exactly a friendly place to play. And the Chiefs are heavily favored. So, yeah, maybe you think they throw the ball more. You know, maybe you think that they're the ones that can crack the nut of the Chiefs D. I think all those things are in play. But, you know, he's probably too expensive for me to consider for cash games.
Yeah, that probably takes off most of the Saints. The Saints are already a tough team to pinpoint in terms of their skill position players just because they're happy to just get the ball to whoever's in the best matchup, and that can be a really tricky thing because then they all kind of perform and then the prices all stay in sort of the same area, and then you just simply can't trust any one of the single performances. So I think this is a fine week to just get away from a team that is, like you said, clearly worse on the road historically. What about Chiefs? Ware continued to get the ball last week even though Charles was back. Do you think you see the Chiefs continue to go to him? Do you think they start to even out some of the touches as the season goes forward? This is a pretty juicy matchup for an offensive team, but I'm just not totally sure I see where to kind of pinpoint the play.
Yeah, you're seeing Ware pop up around the industry as a play for this week. And, you know, Andy Reid has come out and said that Jamal Charles is still not ready for a full workload. Whenever they were talking about a guy of Jamal Charles's pedigree potentially coming back and gumming up the works, it's got to give you pause. Ware also just doesn't represent for me a huge value. I mean, he's 7,000 on FanDuel. Getting a guy with, you know, who's hearing footsteps from Jamal Charles, like last week's big week notwithstanding, is pretty concerning to me. And not a lot has to go wrong for him to not pay value on 7,000. Like, you know, you've got to be pretty good to pay value on 7,000. And last week, in a week that we saw everything go right, you know, he basically paid 3x points per dollar on this. And that was after getting 26 touches against Oakland. Right. So, you know, I'm cautiously pessimistic on Ware, and then I can see him being a guy a lot of people play in a very juicy matchup. But then I can see him getting, you know, if the game is closer than expected, for instance, I could see him getting more like 18 touches. And, you know, if he's only going to get 18 touches, even in a good matchup, that's, you know, not going to be quite enough. That's it. I'll reserve my judgment here and, you know, reserve the right also to change my mind by Sunday, because I it's always really hard to go against what's perceived to be a chalk play.
Yeah, and they don't do enough in the passing game, I don't think, where you can really target guys like even Kelce or Maclin at their prices, just because they're happy to just either run the ball or throw it out of the backfield. So
yeah, Alex Smith, I think, though, kind of interesting. He was a guy that was showing up in optimal lineups at one point for us last week, and, you know, he's frequently better than people realize, which is,
right,
you know, damning with faint praise. And, you know, he, again, this is the tricky thing with Smith. So, like, last week, 19 for 22, really couldn't have expected more from him, puts up 9 fantasy points there.
Right.
So, you know, more of a big upside play, a guy who could potentially break out if everything breaks right, but yeah, not a guy you're going to want to trust.
Right, he needs the touchdown passes, and they run the ball in the red zone, and so that alone is just going
that'll do it.
Yeah, and you're just going to need so much to go right, because you're basically going to need them to get the third down in the red zone to force him to throw, because they're happy to just run the ball, and because they're good at it, so they're just happy to run the ball enough down the red zone, and it's just, yeah, I don't know.
But if the Chiefs are going to score that many points, someone's got to get them, right? So I think it does behoove the average GFS owner out there to really look at this game and try and figure out, because if you're the one that gets this correct on this game, you could win a big tournament this week. But if you're not, you're going to be left holding the bag while, you know, Jamaal Charles gets the goal line carries or whatever. So, this is one of those ones that's very nebulous. I don't fault anyone for playing Spencer Ware. I'm just not sure I'm going to.
Yeah, I don't think I am either. The next game is the Redskins head into Detroit. The total right now is 49. There is some question about the Detroit running game right now. Who is going to – is Riddick going to be able to play? Is Dwayne Washington going to be able to take all the touches there? So I think you can – that's something we're going to want to keep our ear to the ground on, just in terms of who's going to play running back for them. What kind of stands out to you from the Detroit side of the ball? Do you like them going against Redskins defense this week?
Well, I mean, do I like them overall? Sure, I guess, but the question for me is, like, can we really figure out who's going to get the fantasy value for this week? Golden Tate came out and really had his first big breakout game of the week. He's a guy that a lot of people were looking at early. He was garnering a pretty reasonable target share, you know, 12% or so. Looked like he had taken a back seat to Marvin Jones Jr. in the passing game. And I do still believe that to be the case. But, of course, you're going to love, you know, anyone who scored 27 fantasy points last week at just a $6,600 price tag on FanDuel is going to be a guy you should take a look at. All that said, I mean, last week's 20% target share was, you know, double the previous week and double the weeks 2 weeks before that as well. So I don't know that he's a guy you can really rely on for that kind of target share going forward. It looks to me more like the Lions saw something here that they really liked in the matchup. That being said, Tate has been a source of sustained production for them in the past, has, you know, had a good rapport with Stafford in the past. So I could see him putting up big numbers this week. I do think he'll be someone that people key in on as well. And, you know, I feel like I'm saying this a lot, but I don't know that he'll be someone I key in on, because, again, you know, we talk about this all the time on the podcast, but it's so hard to really judge anything from one game sample size. And the one game for him, while it was quite good, I don't know that necessarily foretells some huge fundamental shift in the philosophy offensively for Detroit. So, I mean, are you higher on him than I am?
Well, it's funny because I'm looking this up right now, and maybe I'll have it before I stop rambling on, because I like to pretend I know things while I'm looking up in the background. But the Redskins this year are the league worst against wide receiver twos in terms of DVOA, which, I mean, to some degree makes sense if they're targeting the WR2 because Norman is shadowing, right? Although they haven't totally done that this year. They haven't had Norman follow every guy around the field. So, but they do rank 32nd. It's not like they're great against wide receiver ones either. They're like 18th. So it's a little tricky when you try to figure out who is who on a team. Like it's who do teams see as the guy? Like, do teams see Marvin Jones as the wide receiver one? Do they see Tate after coming over this week? You know, Norman is actually playing a little hurt. He's got a sprained wrist. This is where trying to label a player WR1, WR2, whatever, gets a little bit, it's not an exact science, right? And then you can also even, you know, figure out where they line up in terms of on the field. And that's also not a perfect science either, because teams start switching things around in terms of how they move wide receivers. So it all just boils down to, I think that you could see a huge game from one of these Detroit wide receivers for sure. I'm just not sure which one, and that's mostly my problem.
Sure. I mean, Anquan Boldin last week out-targeted Marvin Jones, you know. Anquan Boldin has out-targeted Golden Tate in, let's see here, 2 of the last 4 weeks. So right. I don't know that anyone really knows for sure. Actually, Bolden's kind of interesting because they use him in the red zone as well. But yeah, I don't know. It's very, very uncertain. And while, again, it's a high total, if you don't know who's going to get that high total, then you could be the person who winds up just picking Golden Tate 2 weeks ago or picking Marvin Jones last week. So I don't know that that's where you want to be for cash games.
I think if you're making, not for cash games, if you're making tournament stacks, then this is definitely a place to start doing it, where because there's a good chance you could just come out with one of these guys being one of the top guys of the week. And
Stafford and somebody.
Yes,
could be a reasonable tournament.
Exactly, exactly. And making lineups with iterations off of sort of all three of their receivers, I don't think is the worst way to go. What about the
Zach Center's in that discussion too? I mean, you know, he's not been any great shakes so far, but he really opens up a lot of possibilities in terms of prices at just 5,400. And if you plug him in there and he's going to be the feature back, you know, they use him a little bit in the passing game as well. He doesn't need to do a whole lot to pay a $5,400 price tag. And we've seen cheap running backs in the past, you know, punch in a couple goal line carries and all of a sudden be as a part of the winning tournament lineup. So I got a guy worth keeping on your radar.
What about the Redskins side? Jordan Reed is questionable with concussion, said he hid the concussion. We talked about that off the air, sort of just being like, why do guys do this, man? Like, why do they, of all the things to hide, it just doesn't make any sense. We saw Vernon Davis get the start for him last week. Didn't get a ton of targets, though. Did get into the end zone. What do you see? Anything here? The Redskins are expected to put up some points. Can you pick out any value on their side of the ball?
No, the more emergent guy. Last week, we did think Vernon Davis was going to get the bigger target share, and it turns out we were, you know, better to be lucky than good. He just wound up sneaking in that touchdown and saving the day a little bit. But the more emergent guy in a targets perspective has been Pierre Garçon. Last 2 weeks, he's had a 14% and then an 18% target share and is upping his snaps as well. He played 60 snaps last week. If he's going to be out there, I mean, we've seen the 2 seasons ago, Pierre Garçon was one of the most targeted receivers in all of the NFL. So he's just 6,100. I think he's a very interesting play. He's not a classic red zone target, which really hurts him for big tournaments. But, you know, he is a target hog and a really good chain mover. So I could see him having another nice week this week. I don't really think there's anyone else, any other skill guys on the Redskins I'm interested in. And then Kirk Cousins continues to be underrated from a DFS perspective. Goes out last week, and you know, the 18 fantasy points, nothing to write home about, but 7,000 salary means that that's about 2.5 points per dollar, and that's just good. You know, like, it doesn't win you a tournament outright, but it's oftentimes more than enough to get you there in cash games. So, you know, a guy worth at least keeping on your radar. You know, like, our system has his average points per game is around the fifth highest projected points we have this week. So that's not so bad at all.
We were dying laughing last week because there was 2 times where you were like, you hit me in the shoulder and said, oh my God, look at the Redskins game right now on one of the TVs we were watching. And it was like, Kirk Cousins just hit another Eagles D-back right in stride.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's crazy because, I mean, we often talk about how it's like, and this is like why watching the game sometimes is more of a curse than a blessing, but like, a guy with Kirk Cousins, like, in a given week, yeah, he's in there 70% completion, 77% completions. Like, you know, he's not going to keep throwing these kind of interceptions. And then last week, he had 2 of the worst passes I've ever seen thrown. And, I mean, he also threw for 52% completion percentage. So, you know, that'll happen against a tough Eagles D. But, man, that pick six and then also the
there was
the other
screen.
One, the guy just happened to drop in the secondary. Like,
right.
Like, man, right in the breadbasket for the other team. Not exactly what you want to see. So, but yeah, no, I still think Cousins is a fine play, though.
All right, the next game we have is kind of getting an ugh factor, at least for one side of the ball, is the Browns head to Cincinnati to face the Bengals. Bengals, huge favorites, minus 10. They're expected to put up somewhere in that 28-point range. The Bengals are a funny team because they're a team that plays 2 totally different styles based on whether they're winning or losing. I know most teams do that, but they just have totally almost different personnel that they run out there depending on the game script.
Sure.
And I'm just not sure where we think about guys like Jeremy Hill as opposed to Gio Bernard in a game where they are supposed to be heavy favorites here. What do you think about the Bengals here? Guys like Dalton are also showing up high in the system.
Yeah, we don't think about these guys for the most part. I mean, the running backs, Bernard gets 19 touches last week. So if you could project him for 19 touches in any given week, he would clearly be worth the $6,300 salary, but you can't. Because the week before that, he had 15 and then 13 and 10 the week before that. So I don't really think you can do anything with any of the skill position guys on the Bengals, including AJ Green, who's, you know, his emergence was probably overstated earlier in the season. As for Dalton, I mean, he's been putting up fantasy totals, right? Like, we're now at 2 back-to-back weeks with 22 fantasy points or more. He's just a little too expensive, though. I mean, I would be a lot more interested in Dalton if he were still kind of in that sleepy 7,400 range on FanDuel, but increasing that by 10% really raises the ick factor on him for me. Sure, it's a nice matchup with the Browns, but it's not that good a matchup, right? I mean, not for a guy who's routinely under 20 fantasy points per game. And if I'm going to, I'll qualify that. That's basically spending up at quarterback. And if I'm going to spend up at quarterback, I'm looking to do better than Andy Dalton.
Yeah, I think that's true on FanDuel, where he's 8,100. At 6,000 on DraftKings, I think that considering that he's fairly accurate and this is such a good matchup, I mean, he's a guy that is kind of showing up in optimal lineups right now for us. This is on Thursday morning. The 6,000 price is about as cheap as it gets for a starting quarterback. So I think I'm much more willing to pay that price there. 8,100, no way on FanDuel. He's priced in that, you know, he's more than guys like, you know, Phillip Rivers or Eli Manning like that. Or excuse me, Phillip Rivers or like he's in that Drew Brees zone. It just doesn't make a ton of sense. But on DraftKings,
yeah, he's
6,000.
The 13th most expensive quarterback on DraftKings and the 7th most expensive quarterback on FanDuel. So yeah, I think that point holds. I think he's a reasonable play on DK there.
And I think also I think the Bengals will be one of the heavier owned defenses this week against the Browns team that really just doesn't have much in the way of anything. The Browns are expected to put up almost 0 points. So I think the Bengals is maybe one of the chalk plays, and there's a couple more that will stand out, but they're definitely up there. Although they are 5,100 on FanDuel, which is a little expensive for defense. If you thought that the Bengals were going to get up early in this game and just try to get out of the game, could you consider Jeremy Hill if you thought he was going to get into that 17 to 20? He's had two games where he went 17 and 21 touches. If you thought he was getting into that zone, could you consider him?
I'm not paying 6,800 for a guy who like occasionally gets a lot of touches. Like that's just not reassuring to me. I mean, his touches the last, if you combine his last three games, he wouldn't have paid value on his current price. So no, there's no way you can consider the guy.
All right, Raiders head to Jacksonville. Another game with a pretty high total. It started at 50. It's been bet down into the 48 range. The Jacksonville is a slight favorite in the old, probably will happen once or twice a year for them, but they're slight favorites at home against a Raiders team that's really struggled on defense. Let's start with the Jacksonville side. Bortles is a guy we wrote up for our cash game values. Does he strike you as like, this is like the one-off, like there are going to be weeks where you're just going to play a guy simply because the matchup is juicy enough? And does Bortles fall into that sort of category for us this week?
He does. I mean, the Raiders this season, not that they've been historically bad against the pass, but they've been pretty close. I mean, at this point, I believe they're giving up 10% more passing yards per game than any other team in the NFL, and that's just really hard to do. You know, teams tend to be pretty clustered in categories like that, and for them to be such an outlier is very, very strange. And Bortles is cheap. You know, last season he was quite a good passer, especially when playing from behind, and you know, he can put up big games from time to time. This season, he's been a little bit more erratic, but still, taken as a whole, I mean, two games ago, he had 26 fantasy points against Indianapolis. He had a 20-point performance against San Diego. So, you know, he's not a guy you can just jam in there regardless of matchup, but at 7,400 on FanDuel, with an excellent matchup, arguably the best matchup in the NFL against Oakland, and in what should be a very fast-paced game, too, by the way. I mean, Oakland not shy about trying to move the ball downfield also. So, yeah, I think Bortles represents just what you're looking for if you want to save up a little bit at quarterback and spend up elsewhere.
Yeah, I like him too because he'll get out. He's another guy that will get out and run, you know, somewhere in that three times a game. So if you're just want to get, if you think you can get maybe like 20 yards rushing and
pop, yeah, a point or two, sure.
Yeah, like that's just that little bit of extra boost in a game against a really, really bad defense. What about like the wide receivers here, Allen Robinson or any of the running backs? Like if we like Bortles, do we also like any of their skill position guys?
I mean, not really from a cash game perspective. They're all kind of just the wrong price. I mean, Robinson is just simply too expensive. He's had one good game this season. He's been heavily targeted at times, but it's been so erratic. And really, I mean, he's always struggled with converting targets to receptions, and that's really come to a head this season. So it seems like, I mean, at 8,400, you can just simply do better. Not to say that he's unplayable for big tournaments. I feel like I make that caveat for every single player, but right. Yeah, not a cash game guy you're going to consider. Hearns may be a little bit more interesting. I mean, he saw a big spike in target share last week, going up to 22% of the targets when he was on the field. But that said, he's not even an every snap guy, so that's going to be less than interesting. The FanDuel price at 6,000 is one that's, you know, he's priced to move, right? I mean, we've seen him put up some really big games in the past, but yeah, not a guy I'm probably going to jam in there either.
The running back situation still continues to be sort of just a question mark between Yeldon and Ivory. I don't think
that... Yeah, two guys who stink, who don't put up fantasy points. Yeah, I'm not going to play either of those guys.
What about a guy like Amari Cooper? We've seen the targets really get bumped up for him over the last couple weeks. He's had two straight weeks now where they were just kind of getting, I don't know, either incentivized to get him the ball more or just saw something in terms of matchup. Is he a cash game consideration? You know, figuring that Oakland just throws a ton. They you know, they're supposed to be down in this game as well. They will throw a ton. Can you consider Cooper in cash games?
Absolutely. Cooper, you know, we've talked about this build of player in the past, you know, the Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, T.Y. Hilton sort of build where they get a lot of targets and don't convert a lot of those into receptions. But when you get enough targets, it almost doesn't matter, right? So even if, you know, for a guy like Jarvis Landry, maybe he only needs 10 targets to get 7 receptions, and where Cooper might need something like 12, but he's getting him, right? I mean, Now in the last 2 weeks, he has a 20% target share. He seems to be also the really reassuring thing I'm liking about Cooper is that they're also using him just to move the chains from time to time, and that was a role that had previously been reserved for Michael Crabtree. So if he's going to chew up a lot of Crabtree's role simply by virtue of being the more dynamic downfield threat, then I like Cooper quite a bit. I mean, now we're at two weeks and averaging 135 yards per game in those 2 weeks. One good matchup, but one really tough matchup against Kansas City. So in a good matchup with Jacksonville, it stands to reason that that number will continue to increase. And especially, I think Jacksonville will also be trying to move the ball. I think there will be a lot of possessions in this game, and that just plays very well to what Cooper's trying to do.
The Raiders running back situation is still just totally a total stay away. Murray may play, he might not play. Even if he didn't play, they just have too many guys out there that you really can't, unless they were to one day just decide, you know, Rashard or Washington or the other guy, I can't remember his name, was going to be the guy, then you can start considering it. But the fact that they just break up the carries so much, I think that was something we just can pretty much
And they avoid. Haven't even been good on the carries they have gotten, right? So, like, you're not going to play any of these guys.
The next game is the Colts and the Titans. This one's had some pretty crazy line movement. It opens with there's all kinds of stuff moved here. It opened at 51, a 51 over-under. It dropped down to 47.5. It opened with the Titans minus 6.5. They're down to minus 2.5. Where do you see a lot of that line movement coming from? Do you think it was just mispriced to start? And, I mean, the Titans are still kind of up there in terms of overall projected points against a bad defense. What do you think about this game here?
I'm not sure. That opening line I thought was such a puzzle when it came out as well. I mean, for the Titans to be favored against anyone by 6.5 feels shocking to me. Am I wrong about that? I mean, they're not a good defense or a good offense. So, I mean, it's like the Colts can't keep it close here. So I think that was simply just, you know, Vegas missing the mark, which they do very, very occasionally, because it hasn't really been like there's been any big news to move the needle here. I mean, Luck has continued to struggle with his shoulder. The Colts have come out and said that there's no big issue there. So I don't really know. I have no idea what's going on here.
Well, they're not a terrible defense. I mean, they're top 10 in DVOA this year. So the defense isn't bad, but the offense is not good enough to the point where you think they're just going to blow a team out, which 6.5 is essentially like blowout. The blowout is on the table, right? When you get to that opening line. So that part of it at least seemed totally wrong.
I suppose that's fair. But when you look at Tennessee's schedule this season, they've played a lot of pretty bad offenses. I mean, yeah, they have Oakland, so that's a tough one, but outside of that, they played Houston, the abomination of Houston.
Right.
They played Miami. They played Cleveland. So, I mean, and then they have Detroit, which is more in like the league average department. But, you know, Detroit was still kind of finding their stride. That was the first game of the season. So, yeah, I'm not prepared to look at Tennessee and say, you know, take that DVOA, especially an unweighted DVOA that doesn't take strength of schedule into consideration, really as, you know, as anything other than what it is, which is a reasonable performance against an outstanding schedule for an opposing defense. The Colts will be, you know, outside of the Raiders, by far the best offense they've faced, and Luck has been quite good in the last few games, and I think that this will be, you know, a closer game than the early line dictated. So anyway, there's no real reason to argue about that simply because Vegas already agrees with us. The line's moved back, so not worth spending too much time on it, but yeah, I do think there's some fantasy relevant guys coming out of this game.
Yeah, you put DeMarco Murray into our cash game consideration value plays. Make the case for him quickly. He had a down week where he did not have any receptions last week, coming off of games where they, you know, were willing to get him a ton of targets sort of out of the backfield. Last game was a little bit down, all things considered, though he still did score. Is he still in that cash game play for you?
You know, he is. It was troubling, of course, to see him not get any targets out of the backfield, but the fact that he still carried the ball 21 times, he is still the definitive goal line back, and the Titans are still favored here against a weak Colts defense, lends me to want to give him, you know, a little bit of a longer leash. And I wouldn't be surprised if he winds up being the odd man out. Like when I was writing the picks article on the front end, we hadn't had a lot of this running back news just yet.
Right.
And I suspect now I'll probably do something like Le'Veon Bell plus a cheap guy, or even go double cheap coming up on Sunday with the way things are breaking down. So yeah, Murray's good. You know, lightning's going to strike me when I say this, but he might wind up being like a LeSean McCoy guy for me for last week, which didn't work out, where a guy I like from a value perspective, but the dollars and cents don't wind up making enough sense for me to play him actually in my own lineups.
Murray and Bell are in the top tier of running back that you can, like the other guys in this range, like David Johnson plays Seattle, Gurley is Gurley, there's Melvin Gordon, and then you kind of drop down. Of that group, and McCoy has some injury issues, of that group, Murray and Bell clearly stand out above the rest, but like you said, there might just be enough cheap running backs that we can get away from him.
That's kind of my hope, frankly. I mean, even Le'Veon Bell, like the uncertainty at quarterback just makes everything so annoying in Pittsburgh.
Right.
But he's just so good and still not that expensive that, you know, we'll get to him later. But yeah, Murray's not quite there for me.
We had thought early in the season, based on, I'm not exactly sure what, news, hype, whatever, that Tajae Sharpe was going to emerge as Mariota's go-to guy. That has clearly not happened, but it does happen for Kendall Wright last week, coming off an 8-133 game. Do you see his targets continue as he sort of just works his way back into the offense and becomes more of, does he end up being the target guy in Tennessee?
Well, the answer is we're not sure. So, yes, I mean, Wright went out there and had a tremendous performance, and people look at the stat line and Kendall Wright's track record as a really strong possession receiver and figure that this is going to be the plan in Tennessee. I think certainly, almost without question, he's the most skilled and experienced receiver they have right now, but he did only play 22 snaps, which is so weird. I mean, right. 22 of the 62 snaps, especially given his success out there, and that makes me feel like maybe the Titans just don't think he's ready from a physical perspective. But I mean, anytime a guy gets 40% of the team's targets right. when he's on the field is completely ridiculous. And actually on the 14 routes he ran, he got 9 of the targets on those. So that's just absurd. I think once we see Wright is the type of guy that once they do take the handcuffs off and just let him go and just, you know, play a full game, he's going to put up some huge game at some point. I wouldn't mind trying to guess when that's going to be and playing him early in the season, but I, in an ideal world, we get him at a cheap price when we know he's going to play all the snaps.
Yeah, it's really interesting because that $5,000 salary tag on FanDuel is like so close.
Oh, they're begging you to take him.
Right. Yeah, if you knew that he was going to play, like, yeah, like what is it, 50%?
40 snaps.
That's what I mean.
40 snaps would be insane.
Like with close to double digit targets of 5,000, he'd be against an Indianapolis defense that's pretty rough. He'd be an auto play, I think.
Might be already. I mean, he might be a guy that people are willing to take a stab on because I mean, it would be pretty hard for the snaps to go the other way. Like, I mean, if they go down, that would be a really, really surprising. But geez, playing anyone who played just 22 snaps, really at any price tag, you're playing with fire. I mean, just for a frame of reference, he played 21 and 25 the previous 2 weeks and had, 16 receiving yards total. 23 receiving yards total in those weeks. So, yeah, don't bet your house on Kendall Wright having a great game, but, you know, might be worth a $2 GPP flyer.
The Ravens head into New York to take on the Jets. The Jets announced yesterday, I believe, that the Ryan Fitzpatrick era might be over. The Geno Smith era might be for one game, and then it might be someone else. Who knows? The Jets seem like a total mess here. They, even all that being said, the Ravens don't seem that much better, as this game is basically a pick 'em with a pretty low total. Right now on FanDuel, Geno Smith is showing up in optimal lineups for the main slate. It's a price thing.
Is this easy money? Play Geno Smith everywhere.
Well, I'm wondering. It's interesting, right? Because this is a situation where he should be the quarterback, right? He'll be the starting quarterback. He's basically a league minimum because he's priced as a backup because this news comes out well after. You know, he's a $5,000 on FanDuel, which is about $1,200 less than the next starting quarterback, which is Landry Jones, and $1,500 less than So, but considering the fact that he will get out in the run game. Mostly because he can't really throw and then is just undecided and then just needs to scramble for his life. But at 5,000, I mean, can we consider just about any starting quarterback at 5,000? Like, that's mostly my question here. It's like, could you just put anybody's name in here and this would be the guy you would start at quarterback for FanDuel?
Yes. the short answer is yes. I mean, like, if you take the first game of the season as a proxy for this, we and basically everyone in the industry recommended you play Dak Prescott in the first week. Now, I think you could argue that Dak Prescott's upside in the first week of his NFL career was basically what Geno Smith is. I mean, they're very similar players in a lot of ways. You know, Geno Smith, his first season, averaged 23 yards rushing per game and had 6 rushing touchdowns in that first game. Now, this feels like an eternity ago when people were excited about Geno Smith. That was 2013, and you know, ran the ball a little bit less after that. But man, on 5,000, you don't really have to do very much at all. You know, interceptions have always been a problem for Geno Smith, and you know, lack of being good at football has always been a problem.
Yeah, that's an issue
for
him, right?
Yeah. Well, last season, the one game he started, they let him throw the ball 42 times, and he went for 265 and 2 touchdowns with a pick. I mean, not good, right? But not bad. He had 34 yards rushing as well. So, I mean, yeah, he's you have to consider a guy, any guy at 5,000, and a guy with a track record, you know, you consider him even further. I guess the one thing that's throwing a wet blanket on this for me is I would feel much more comfortable with this if Ryan Fitzpatrick were injured, because Smith is a guy, when he looks bad, boy, does he look bad. And right. He could go out there and just look terrible, and then they could do the old oopsie daisies and put Fitzpatrick back in there. But yeah, I mean, it's, if you think he's going to play the full game, it's hard. I'd be hard pressed not to play.
Well, that's the question, right? Because with Dak, there was no question. Dak was going to play the whole game no matter what. Like, there was no question about who was going to take the snaps. With Smith, that's right. I agree with you. That's not the case, and that is the only concern. He has weapons. I mean, he has guys to throw to. Marshall is a possession receiver. Anunua has shown that he can catch the ball. They have a pass catching back in Forte. So there's not like, it's not like this is like a quarterback taking over the Browns where you're like, oof, what do they have, right? They don't have anything. These are, they have players. At 5,000, I'm willing to risk it, especially on the main slate. It basically allows you to pay up in every other position and get high floor guys and high volume guys at every other position. I'm fine with it, I think, and I'm just willing to just sort of sit there and hope that he stays in for the whole game, which again is not really a sure thing.
I think with Fitzpatrick too, like, you know, my suspicion is that the Jets don't feel like, they would have to feel like this is kind of not close for them to even make a move like this. And Fitzpatrick with 11 picks against 5 touchdowns this season, it's not like you're returning to any sort of safety. It's not like they're putting Geno Smith because Fitzpatrick is safe but unexciting. Like, he's just been a train wreck. Right. So, I'm talking myself into it.
What do you think it does to the Jets receivers, though? Like,
it's probably not great, but, you know, this isn't the average situation, like I said, where you're going from a guy who's super safe to a guy who's not. Fitzpatrick has been pretty bad this season as well. I mean, 57% completion rating is quite lousy. And while I don't see Smith really improving on that very much, I don't think he's going to be that much worse. So I don't think changes the discussion all too much. But I do think the one thing that dings them a little bit, I suspect there will be a little bit less opportunity with Smith getting out in the running game a little bit more. And, you know, a guy like Marshall, who's priced at, you know, what his situation was, and it had 2 excellent weeks and then 1 down week. I would be pretty hesitant to play any of these guys until we see who Smith winds up finding the best rapport with.
Next game is the Chargers and the Falcons. This one has the highest total of the week. It started at 50 and has been bet all the way up to 53. It's in Atlanta. Both teams don't play a ton of defense, and both teams have offenses, especially in the pass game. Let's start with the Falcons side. Is Julio, you know, I think Julio Jones was in our values play article. He had a big game against Seattle. Are we going back to the well with Jones this week? And do you think he's like just one of the chalkier plays this week?
Well, yes, I wrote up Julio Jones primarily actually because I do believe he will be part of the chalk this week. I did offer, you know, a little bit of concern and guidance here. And people, by the way, you know, have reached out saying that we kind of hedge too much. And while I get that that's unpopular in the prognostication business, you're supposed to be like, yeah, no, def, buy. This is an easy buy. Like, we just want to be honest, right? So while I do think Julio Jones is a reasonable play, and I think, you know, also just from the perspective of you get to play Julio Jones, and then, you know, it's like everyone gets to play with $9,200 off the table and one fewer player. Like, from that perspective, I think Julio Jones is a great play. Like, if you think everyone's going to play him this week, and I suspect everyone will, then I don't blame you at all. But I just want to put things, you know, his performances into context a little bit, because I think you can get in trouble when you don't. So Julio Jones this season is averaging 21.2 yards per catch. That is about 6 yards more than he ever has in his career. So I think you can pretty definitively say, unless you think Julio Jones, for some reason, as he's getting older and more injured, is all of a sudden a guy who we can count on for 21.2 yards per catch, then I think we can pretty definitively say that that number is going to come back down. So if you're liking Julio Jones for this game, I suggest that you should like him based on his historical yards per reception, which is more in that 16 range, even in a good season. So from there, I think then you need to say, well, what you know, if he's going to have roughly his historical yards per catch numbers, then he needs to be generating value from somewhere else, right? So last year, he generated most of his value by virtue of being the most targeted receiver in the NFL. That was great, and he was frequently worth 9,000. This year, he's been targeted 8.2 times per game. That is not enough. 8.2 targets a game is not enough for an elite wide receiver one. Now, you might say the matchup is great and he's going to make it up there, and that's all well and good, and you know the potential for that I think is quite high. But I think people view this as like one of those slam dunks, like, you know, when you get like, say, Antonio Brown in a great matchup, when Antonio Brown is crushing it and getting all his targets. And I simply don't see it that way. I mean, I think it's a very reasonable play. I think I probably will wind up playing him just because, you know, I just as soon play the guy that 75% of people in the league are going to play for my cash games. But I just don't. I think that he's going to be cheaper at some point in the future. And if this were anything other than a great matchup, I would be willing to fade it.
Yeah, that's the thing too. And especially considering you're going to get savings in places like running back or even quarterback, which we've already discussed, that's what's going to make it even easier for people to just jam Jones's salary in there. And again, it might be correct, though you are paying very, very, very top dollar for him at this point. And I'm totally with you on the targets just being just enough up in the air that I'm not willing to call him like just an auto lock. What about the run game for Atlanta? Freeman had got a bunch of touches last game, but they're still willing to sort of split carries between him and Coleman. Is there any point where Freeman's going to become sort of a cash game play because of safety, or is just there Atlanta's just willing to use just too many different weapons?
Yeah, I don't perceive Freeman to be that safe, again, just from a price perspective, right? So, you know, anyone who can go out and have a 26-touch game against Denver and then a 15-touch game against Seattle, and prior to that, a 14-touch game against Carolina, you know, not really where you want to be in the $7,500 range from my perspective. And yeah, you don't mind the receptions, and that increases his stock on DraftKings a little bit. But yeah, and you know, there's going to be times where just Tevin Coleman's the guy out on the field when they get down to the goal line and he winds up not, you know, getting to punch it in. Again, 36 snaps last game, 40 the one before that. I don't know. He seems like a paper tiger to me and not a guy I'm going to ever trust unless one of the two gets injured.
What about a guy like Rivers possibly playing from behind in a dome? He has some weapons. Is Rivers a guy that you can see hitting some upside here because of game script? And is there anyone to even trust in their receiver game, or they kind of just spread it around too much?
Sure. I talked about Rivers in the article again this week too, but I think that a lot of people are going to sleep on Rivers for this week after kind of an underwhelming performance against the Broncos. But, you know, the Broncos are one of the toughest passing defenses in the NFL, having allowed the fifth fewest passing yards to opposing defenses, whereas Rivers' Week 7 opponent, you know, the Falcons, have allowed the fifth most. So I don't really love that Rivers is kind of lacking offensive weapons right now, but he's made it work. I mean, Hunter Henry has kind of emerged as a guy he's willing to target. Another week of healthy Gates might mean that, you know, we can get something from him too. And some of the other fringe guys, Tyrell Williams and things, have been reasonable in the absence of the really top guys like Keenan Allen. But yeah, I think Rivers is a very good play. I think, you know, we take, again, the Vegas total and Rivers' salaries and where the touchdowns are likely to come from. And I think we can picture playing Rivers in probably any format. Although, you know, his lack of high upside weapons means he's probably not a great GPP play.
Yeah, it ends up becoming pick your poison with their wide receiver core because they seem to zig whenever I zag on them. So I'm a little burnt out on trying to figure out which receiver is going to just sort of figure which one he's going to connect with on a given game. But all those guys are definitely in play, especially considering the way the game could go. The next one is the Bucs and the Niners. The guy that's probably going to end up becoming, I would suspect, a very chalky play this week because of price is Jacquizz Rodgers. He got a ton of carries last time when Martin and Sims were both out. That's going to be the case again. They really don't have much in the way of running back. Is Rodgers sort of an auto play for you at this point?
Yeah, I think Rodgers is pretty much an auto play. We've talked about this on and off throughout the season, but these running back situations are frequently where we can wind up saving up really dramatically to pay up elsewhere. And I talked about the uncertainty around, say, like DeMarco Murray, at least on his price point. I think there's a reasonable chance Jacquizz Rodgers has as good a week as DeMarco Murray, and he's 3,000 less. So I think that, yeah, he's going to be a very, very, very chalk play. I mean, 30 carries against Carolina, 5 receptions. That's an unheard of level of opportunity. And, you know, normally you'd worry about Tampa Bay running backs because Tampa Bay's awful and they have trouble running the ball. But against San Francisco, they're actually favored here. So,
right.
Yeah, I think Rodgers is going to be featured in basically every facet of the game, almost independent of game script.
I suspect he and Julio Jones are the two highest owned players this week. San Francisco's 28th against the run DVOA this season. They play at a fast pace still, even with Kaepernick. The price just isn't anywhere close to the opportunity. This is the exact kind of situation you're looking for.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this game, actually. Mike Evans is another guy. Yep. I wrote up. Evans has been one of the most consistent targets guys all season long. Again, folded into that Amari Cooper and T.Y. Hilton class, where a lot of targets doesn't always mean a ton of receptions. But, you know, now it's five straight weeks with 17% or better target share. He's on the field for every snap. He's a red zone threat. He's a downfield threat. He really does everything you want out of an expensive wide receiver. And like Cooper, I could see playing him in any format. And I think, you know, Tampa Bay in a week where they're actually favored, this might be one of his higher upside possible weeks. So I actually, man, it's going to feel weird playing $2 in the old cash game lineup, but I might wind up doing it this week.
Yeah, and the other guy I think maybe possibly even consider too is Adam Humphries. He's going to step into the wide receiver two role with Vincent Jackson on IR now. He's another guy that could see, I mean, he's basically coming at the minimums if you thought he was going to get in that 6 to 7 target range. He's another guy. I mean, this might be the most bucks we play all season. Cameron Brate's another guy. So there are just a couple interesting guys. This is what happens when you have a team that is cheap, where they've had some personnel movement, and they're playing just a great team to target guys against in DFS. And yeah, if there's any week to play 2 or 3 or even, oh God, I can't believe to say it, maybe even more bucks, this is going to probably be the week. What about?
Well, and on San Francisco, you know, they also have their own running back situation they're dealing with. So the news came out that Carlos Hyde is going to miss this game. Early in the season, it looked like Sean Drone would be the auto fill in there, but we're not totally sure now based on, you know, some of the words out of their camp. It looks like Iron Mike Davis might fill in instead. And, you know, neither of those guys is particularly probably a guy you want to put in, like, just if, because it's such an uncertain situation, but it's so cheap. It's at 4,500 that if there weren't a guy like Jacquizz Rodgers available this week, as well as some cheap quarterbacks, I would probably look even more closely at this game. But, you know, for your big tournaments, when you think everyone's going to play Rodgers because he's very clearly the cheap guy you just want to plug in, guessing right on the San Francisco game could pay outsized benefits. You know, San Francisco doesn't like to pass in the red zone. They would prefer to run. My gut tells me that Mike Davis is going to wind up being the guy, but yeah, either of them could wind up having a huge week.
Yeah, you never would have thought that a game against the Bucks and the Niners would have so many DFS implications, but it probably is.
Unreal, right?
It's actually probably if not the most interesting game from just a total number of players standpoint, but it's really, really high up there. Said that was not the thing we thought we would ever say at the beginning of the season. The next game is the Patriots and the Steelers. This one would have been a lot more interesting had it not been for Ben going down last game. They now come in with Landry Jones. The Patriots are huge favorites. What does the Roethlisberger situation do to the entire Steelers team in a game where they are heavy, heavy underdogs against the Patriots?
Yeah, mostly it just screws everything up. Antonio Brown, you can't play him at 9,000. He really tailed off dramatically with Landry Jones playing last season. Sammy Coates, you know, the guy who's cheap, but you just have no idea how he's going to interface with a new quarterback. And then really the only guy to consider, I think, from the Steelers side is Le'Veon Bell. Bell was good last year when Landry Jones was out there, and it makes sense because if they're not going to pass, somebody's got to touch the ball.
Right.
Last week, Bell was a little bit underwhelming against Miami, you know, and I think if you take that as the Steelers showing what their plan is when they're behind, then that's not super reassuring. But the fact that, you know, the Steelers camp is also coming out and saying that Bell will see more snaps at wide receiver this week leads me to believe that he's going to be plan 1, 2, and 3 for them, and that, you know, is reassuring enough for me to want to play him.
I think you can consider the Patriots defense here. The Steelers just, they showed what happened last week. They couldn't score on Miami with Jones. They might have similar issues here against the Patriots, though, with a week to work out some of the personnel issues. Maybe it gets a little better. I'm not sure. What about Brady? If you think that they just want to step on the jugular, they're going to have the ball a lot more because the Steelers won't be able to sustain drives. Is Brady in that, basically at this point, in that cash game consideration?
Absolutely. I mean, Brady's been just tearing people up this season. Two other AFC North opponents, Cincinnati and Cleveland, he's averaged almost 400 passing yards and 3 touchdowns a game in his first 2 games. He's still very reasonably priced for quarterbacks that have put up that kind of production, at least in the past. And so while I don't know that you can necessarily guess that he'll continue to throw 400 yards a game, the Patriots and Steelers do have enough of a history where I could see the Pats just going out there and just wanting to stomp on them. And yeah, I think Brady's very, very well positioned to have a huge game here and wouldn't mind playing him in any format, really.
What about a guy like James White? Gets a ton of receptions last week. Not that much out of the run game, most 7 attempts. Gets 15 total touches. I know he scores the 2 touchdowns. Is he a value? Is he just too iffy? Can you just not trust guys like him just because of the way the Patriots sort of run their offense?
Yeah, he's a tournament play. You'd love to see 8 receptions out of the backfield, but pass-catching running backs historically, especially if they're carrying almost none of the run load, will have these big weeks. Like picture Reggie Bush or Theo Riddick, where, yeah, you'll have the breakout weeks from time to time, but for every breakout week you'll have, you know, like he had 9 touches the week before that and scored just 10 fantasy points, and you're just not, you're not doing anything at all unless he has one of those huge transcendent weeks. But you're really counting on the touchdowns in that case, and those aren't going to be reliable. So, yeah, maybe worth a shot in the dark in a big tournament, but he won't be part of my GPP rotation.
Considering how much savings you're potentially getting at both quarterback and running back, is Gronk a guy that we can consider paying $8,500 for? I mean, you're paying tippy-top wide receiver one prices for him, but you're getting savings in all the other areas. Like if you were to play Geno Smith and Jacquizz Rodgers, let's say, Can we go back? Are we looking at Gronk old, where he's going to get maybe close to double-digit targets, and he's a very safe wide receiver, tight end, even at those prices?
I don't think so for me. I mean, Gronk at $8,500, that's so expensive. While, you know, you love to see him playing a full amount of snaps in the last 2 weeks and gathering a lot of the target share. Like Julio Jones, I mean, he's averaging more than 22 yards per reception this season, significantly above his historical averages. He hasn't even really been a red zone ball hog either. So, well, last week you would have been happy playing him on these prices. We haven't seen that kind of production just yet. So for me, he's more of a guy you stick with Brady in big tournaments and hope that they connect for all the points, but not a guy I'm going to play in cash.
The Sunday night game is Seattle and Arizona. David Johnson's been a guy that's been dominating touches for Arizona, though now they'll have to play a tough Seattle team. Seattle kind of going the other way against Arizona. Is this not a game? I mean, for me, this game kind of meets in the middle of thanks but no thanks, but I don't know if you have a different thought process here.
Really, the main guy that's coming out of this game for me is Jimmy Graham. I wrote about him in the Picks article this week, but now 3 straight weeks of a lot of targets and a lot of production, and you know, still pretty reasonable. I mean, I think if we had a wide receiver, the thing I like to do, you know, we just talked about Gronk, but if you just compare tight ends to wide receivers in terms of their production and picture, like, would I be happy with this production on this price at wide receiver, then that's a reasonable proxy. So Graham, 3 straight weeks, averaging 100 yards a game in that time, just under it, actually, does get the touchdown, but has been targeted in the red zone more than that, and averaging about 14 fantasy points per game. So very reasonable production on 6,700. Arizona historically has kind of struggled against tight ends, and I don't think that's a bad spot to allocate some dollars at all. After Jimmy Graham, though, I am not very enthusiastic about this one.
No, I'm with you, too. This is mostly just a game where I don't really want much to do with it. I think that the defenses are just strong enough that it doesn't make sense with where a lot of these other guys are priced, especially guys like David Johnson, even though he could see a lot of touches. I just don't see the volume being there from a pacing situation. And the final game is the Monday night game in the old who really cares territory, I think, from NFL viewership standpoint, is the Texans go into Denver. Denver are 7.5 favorites right now. What do we like from this game? It doesn't have as many fantasy implications because this game is not featured on the main slate, though for those shorter, you know, the Sunday evening kind of ones, do you like anything on the Denver side of the ball with the running back or the quarterback situation, anything here?
Now, this is hard because Denver is such a good defense that it rules out most of Houston. There is a note that Will Fuller might not play in this game. In fact, he probably won't. So, you know, you could give a bump to guys like DeAndre Hopkins or Fedorowicz. But, man, Denver is so good on defense that is that really the direction you want to go? I don't totally know. As for the C.J. Anderson, Devontae Booker situation, you know, neither of them has really returned a ton of fantasy value in the recent term. So I don't think you want any of those guys either. So now you're really looking at, you know, maybe you grab Emmanuel Sanders and he's got toe issues. Like, you just keep going down the list and it becomes less and less interesting as you go.
Yeah, you never like to hear, like, when coaches come out and say we want to get guys like Booker more involved, because that's just sort of the death knell for...
Yeah, it just ruins everything for everybody. Yeah.
Exactly. And by the way, it's the smart way to go if you're a team and you're trying to manage touches, but from DFS, yeah, it just kind of ruins it. All right, I think we covered it. That just about an hour, so we covered every single game on the Week 7 NFL slate. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. You can go over and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system that basically informs most of the picks that we're making on a week-to-week basis, and most of our opinions coming through this podcast. It's free for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. That will also include our NBA optimal lineups that are live now, but that season starts in just a few days. So that's all included under one membership package, $29.95 a month. You really won't find a better deal in the industry. Buddy, enjoy Sunday's games, and I will talk to you soon.
Absolutely.